Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at theelmstreetgroup@morganstanley.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Fake news. It's a term we've heard a lot of lately, starting in the presidential campaign and now used loosely by a lot of people when they don't like media coverage. But what is fake news, really? It's hard to define, and by the way, it's not new. Misleading and even false information has been paraded as news for a long time, from stories about brewing race riots in the Jim Crow South to Cold War Soviet propaganda to now in the internet era, where anyone in the world can present anything as news and share it with millions around the globe. Today in The Exchange, former White House correspondent Randall Mickelson of Thomson Reuters News helps us break down the truth from the so-called alternative facts. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Raylan, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, and let's just start off, Randall, by talking about the term itself, because it's controversial, as you know. For example, public radio host Joshua Johnson on 1A summed it up this way, and I thought it was really interesting. I want to hear what you think. Joshua said, "I am strongly on record as being against the term fake news. There is no such thing as fake news, because if it is fake, by definition, it is not news." So what do you think about that, Randall?
I think that's an accurate characterization. I think in the this day and age, though, fake news does have some relevance or sticking power to refer to maybe hoaxes really dressed up to look like an authentic news report. And, you know, as you see on the web, fake news is often in the context of an organization that looks like a news organization, but it's not. And it's couched using, news type language and, so forth. So it's more of a disguise as opposed to a hoax, which can circulate through many avenues.
So just for the purposes of the hour today, we'll say fake news, but we'll recognize that it means that broader phenomenon that you talked about, Randall. Hoaxes dressed up as news.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Give us a couple examples from the slideshow that you've been presenting at libraries around the state. I mean, there's some examples I was looking at this morning that are almost funny, you know? I mean, they look like the real deal.
It's true, and they get big laughs. I have a slideshow, go to libraries and put it up on the screen, and people get a kick out of it. The whole room laughs, but it's some of it is things political oriented. Obama saying he would refuse to hand over the presidency to Trump because he can't in good conscience do that. On the other side, there are fake news stories about Hillary divorcing Bill Clinton, which I've been watching Hillary divorce Bill Clinton since the early 1990s, according to the
a long divorce
the news
proceeding.
Sites. That's right. Those kinds of things get big laughs, but there's also fake news in business, science, lots of other activities.
Well, and we should talk about that a little bit later, Randall, maybe. It isn't just the politics, although that's what comes to mind. And looking at some of the sites, they look legit, like, the Sacramento Telegraph. Well, that's not really the name of the paper, but they use these names, these common names like, the Courier, the Telegraph, the Daily, to look legit, but they're not.
That's right. That's right. And there's little clues. You can check the internet address and it might not be right. But sometimes they'll even use, logos just downloaded, cut and pasted from a legitimate news organization, from CNN. I've seen that from ABC. And then you could, you know, it says CNN story, but then you look in the internet address and it's not CNN. It's a disguised address.
Oh, I see. So they're not even, some of them aren't even making up, you know, again, the Sacramento Telegraph, which doesn't exist. They're using the real CNN logo.
That's right.
And putting their own stuff underneath it.
That's right. That's right. And I, you know, they keep cropping up. It's, they're out there.
Well, here's another big question that I have for you, Randall. I'd love to know what you think. So, and we're going to talk a lot about what this is and what it isn't, and what's the difference between fake news and biased news and propaganda and so on. Mm-hmm. How much do people desire, Randall, to consume real news if it upsets their sense of how the world should be?
Well, that's a good question. I think not a lot. I mean, I think people do can find news upsetting. I mean, there's news that I find upsetting and I only have a limited diet for. I like to be aware of it, but do I want to read it in depth? Do I want it on my screen every day, all day long? Do I want it in my Facebook feed? You know, probably not. And you know, I'm a person who throughout my adult life has tried to be open to, you know, a wide range of views. But it can be too much for any of us to face on a day-to-day basis.
So people can sit around and rail against the purveyors of fake news, and we'll talk about who they are. But how much would fake news survive, Randall, if the ground weren't so fertile for it? People are eager to believe.
They're eager to believe. That's right. That generates the clicks. The techniques behind presenting fake news have been refined, so they know the emotional triggers that'll get people to click on a story, share a story. Well, things like
what's an emotional trigger? That's interesting.
Well, bombshell, you know, bombshell. This is happening. Or a really good example is there's a BuzzFeed has reported on a site that reports on political news, and it's not fake news. I mean, there's germs of truth there, but they do it from both sides. So there's a slide I use in my presentation about the White House advisor Kellyanne Conway. For a while, she laid low, went off the airwaves, you know, during a period of controversy. And so this organization had two outlets. One was called Liberal something, and the other was called Conservative 101. So the liberal outlet said, you know, Kellyanne Conway's finally got kicked off the airwaves. Aren't you glad? So that glad, that's the emotional, you know, trigger. And on the conservative side, conservative 101, it says, you know, Kellyanne Conway got kicked off the airwaves. Prepare to be, you know, infuriated. So again, infuriated, that's the trigger. That's the emotional trigger. It says, I'm going to share this. I'm going to, you know, get upset about it. That's my reaction.
Again, if you want to see Randall's slideshow, we'll put it up a little bit later at nhpr.org. A link to his blog includes his slideshow on fake news. And he's been giving presentations at libraries around the state, to groups around the state. Talking to us today, again, Randall Michelson, managing editor for Thomson Reuters, former member of the White House Press Corps, a former national editor. By the way, he'll be at the Concord Public Library tonight at 6 o'clock. You can join us now with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Randall, let's go to our listeners. David's in Keene. Hi, David. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I was going to bring up some bills. I was listening to your show not too long ago when SB 8 was the subject, which had to do with, as a Senator Birdsell, she did it, and it was because of concerns of voter fraud. So I don't know. My point is, President Trump was saying things like, oh, there's lots of voter fraud in New Hampshire. And I think those bills are the direct result of that.
So there's a real-world consequence to people putting out fake news.
Well, that's right. That's right. It leads to it. I mean, you can debate and research the actual incidence of voter fraud in New Hampshire. I think most reports I've seen on that are pretty well debunked that there was widespread voter fraud. But nonetheless, you do see this kind of legislative reaction or public reaction seeking to allay those concerns or capitalize on them. But you're right, it does, they do affect the public discourse. Look how long the idea of Obama's birth nationality lingered and affected the discourse in the United States.
Well, and David, thank you for the call. And by the way, he said SB8. He's talking about SB3, which is a voter identification bill that we discussed recently on The Exchange. So, David, thank you for that call. You can join us as well, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. When did we first start hearing the term, Randall, fake news? We talked earlier about, some of the problems with the term, but when did we first start learning about this?
I think in the U.S. context, it has to be tied to this election campaign. You saw it. I became first aware of the concept, really, in its information purposes, in regard to the Soviet or the Russian intervention in Ukraine. I have a friend who's an editor in Kiev, English language paper, and I could see them struggling with a lot of misinformation.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, it's very interesting. So during the occupation, of parts of Ukraine, there were a lot of stories going back and forth about atrocities, about political machinations, and so forth. And I really tried to follow, what the truth was, and it was very hard. It was hard to get any kind of sense of who's right, and there's a like a fake news identifying, debunking website in Ukraine, and it's an English language site. But you look at it, and without having any kind of historical context or anything, it's very hard to even to accept, what the debunking site is saying. So I think that same concept applies here, that without a deep knowledge or deep context, sometimes it's hard to make sense of, what's fake and what's not, and who's a legitimate, fake news debunker and who isn't.
And in that situation, correct me if I'm wrong, there were stories about, ethnic Russians being sort of mistreated in that part of Ukraine, and that sort of whipped up this anti-Ukrainian fervor and kind of justified that incursion or intervention,
exactly,
whatever you want to call it, by the Russians to say, hey, we're here to save you. How much of that mistreatment of ethnic Russians was real and how much was it not real?
I really don't know the answer to that. Again, not being on the ground, not having delved deeply into intelligence or anything, I really don't know the answer. But I can say there has been research by groups like the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington that has shown this pattern to be replicated in Eastern Europe, for example, in which fake news type stories are spread with a political intent.
Yeah, weaponized information.
Yeah, exactly. That's
the term
like the
that
frame
I've heard.
They use. Yeah.
And getting to David's point, again, about the voter law here in New Hampshire or the situation in Ukraine, fake news has real world consequences.
That's right. That's right.
All right, David, thanks a lot for that call. Let's take another one. This is Marilyn in Amherst. Hi, Marilyn. Go ahead. You're in The Exchange. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I don't think we need to be studying intelligence to figure out what fake news is. And I don't think we need to go back to its historical, uprising of fake news. I think fake news has been with us for thousands of years, and I think it comes with different labels. Fake news can be something like propaganda. Fake news can be also considered libel. So, President Adams was very concerned about fake news, and he dealt with it.
Marilyn, I'm losing you out on your phone there, so I'm going to let you go. But I'm so happy that she called. So thank you, Marilyn, because she's absolutely right, Randall. Fake news, whatever you want to call it, has been around for a long, long, long time. So I really appreciate the point, Marilyn.
Right. And I think what's different now is that the means of distributing it have become so widely available. Anybody with an internet site can put it up. You can link to it. through a Facebook sharing, it can spread, through Twitter, their studies have shown that maybe 20% of Twitter accounts or active Twitter accounts are automated robots that retweet. So you can generate all kinds of attention to a fake news story or a propaganda or whatever with very little effort. And that's what's different now.
Well, she's right. This form of information has been around for a long time. I'm a bit of a history buff, Randall. So, sometimes before movies during the World War II era, they would have those 5 or 10 minute film clips, a report from the battlefront, stirring music. Everything's going great. I mean, that was news, but it was also kind of propaganda.
Yeah. Well, and there was a famous book by, I think the name was Phil Knightley, War in Particular, that in war, truth is the first casualty. So that's not new. And if you look at the history of journalism, I read a study recently or a report that one of the first real big sensational hoaxes was in the early 1800s, and it emerged out of South Africa, and it had to do with aliens on the moon or something, and it caught fire in the United States press and spread widely. Again, a pure hoax, wide attention, sold a lot of newspapers. So that history goes back a long way.
So we've always had, supermarket tabloids like the National Enquirer, Weekly World News. I think you have a slide of Weekly World News in
that's
your
right. That's
presentation.
That's another one that gets really big laughs. It's from the 1980s. I touched Bigfoot, and that was in the line at every supermarket counter in the country.
So. Well, one of my favorite headlines from the 90s from one of these tabloids was "Space Alien Meets with President Bush," and there's it's a clearly dolled up photo. So why didn't we get all upset about those, 20, 30, 40 years ago? Why is now a more important reason to be concerned about fake news than Space Alien Meets with President Bush?
Well, again, a good question, but I think it was possible for most of us to see through, those stories and laugh at them. When I was in my 20s, I bought those, occasionally, and we'd sit around with buddies and, laugh at them. And you could take it with a grain of salt. Nowadays, when it's mixed in your other news diet, in your Facebook feed, whatever, it's much harder to categorize that as saying, okay, that's deceptive. I can laugh at it. This is real.
So fast forward, Randall, here we are, 2017. And as you've said, anybody can write anything they want and presented as news, no more gatekeepers. How has this really changed how we view news, how we understand what is news? Just the fact that it's sort of everywhere and anybody can present it.
Well, I think, one of the things that it changed in me was a realization I've got to control my news diet. I've got to set some parameters. In the past, I was always looking to expand my sources of information.
Now there's so many, you couldn't possibly,
right.
You could sit in front of the computer literally 24 hours a day. Yeah.
So, for starters, I started going through my Facebook feed and unliking sites that I thought, presented a broad political view, but they became more, just more punditry and kind of unfounded regurgitation of what was already reported. So I limited some of that. I took out anything that looked like a fake news story, I'd report it or I'd hide it on Facebook. I read in a lot every morning using Flipboard. It's a mobile application that aggregates news sources. And I went through that and really identified more. No, these are the ones I want. These are the ones I don't. And I think that's something we can all do. We can gain more control over our news diet. We can dial back the fire hose a little bit. And it doesn't have to mean you're closed-minded, but you can be selective.
Well, and you anticipate my next question, which is, some people would hear that and say, oh, cool, okay, he trimmed his news diet to, get rid of what you called unfounded regurgitation. Other people would say, well, he's doing what we're not supposed to do, right? Which is be in this very comfortable news bubble.
Yeah. Well, right. You don't want to close yourself off to to other points of view. I mean, that again, and just our demographics, it's getting harder and harder to do that these days with neighborhoods being more, you know, more homogenous and
blue states, red states, blue counties, red counties.
You know, every cable channel can have a specific approach, so forth and so on. So we do have to look for outside, you know, sources outside our comfort zone, but we can do that with some deliberateness and, you know, evaluating, okay, is this source outside my comfort zone, you know, something that's going to really inform me, or is it something that's going to mislead me? And, you know, there are ways to rate the or to get information on those sources. A lawyer in Denver put up a site. That's in my slideshow, and I'll give you the link to that. But showing a framework for evaluating, you know, news sources that you might want to draw from, so you understand what you're getting.
You're a sophisticated evaluator, though. You've been in the news business, you know, your whole career. I mean, what about your average person? How are they supposed to sort it all out, especially with that, you know, little bit of confirmation bias that we all carry, you know, inside us?
Yeah. Again, I will refer you to the chart that I'll link on my blog. It was put together by a lawyer in Denver named Vanessa Otero. If you look for her on the web, you can find her little chart. And it's pretty straightforward, and you could, you know, choose two or three things from there that might fit what you view as your news needs. That's one approach, one way to do it.
One way to do it. Other ways to do it might be starting young, you know, encouraging kids to be educated consumers. It's a lot harder for them than it was for us.
Well, and that's a really good point. You know, back to the Russian influence, you know, Finland in 2015, they undertook a national program to counter what they saw as Russian misinformation. And the president said it all starts with education. And I think it's no coincidence that Finland has one of the highest ranked education systems in the world. But we have to train, you know, our students, our children, ourselves as adults to be critical thinkers and to say, what am I reading here? What am I seeing on TV?
What have you noticed, Randall, among your audiences, the differences between older people and younger people in terms of the questions you get or the comments that you get?
That's a good question regarding my audiences. In general, though, I have seen younger people being very skeptical of any kind of institutions, media institutions included. You know, I've
ones that older people might trust.
Ones that older people might trust. Yeah, I mean, one interesting thing is when I go to libraries, I ask, you know, what are their sources of information? You know, most of the people have Facebook accounts. Few people have Twitter. You know, half the people maybe subscribe to a print publication. Everybody, or most of the people listen to public radio, coincidentally.
And we'll be back in just a minute with Randall Mickelson. Stay with us.
Whether you're looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, peeling back the layers of so-called fake news. What's clearly false, what's bias, what's hype, and what's the real deal? Also, how the political soil is fertile for fake news these days. Our guest is longtime Reuters correspondent Randall Mickelson, a former White House reporter and national editor. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Have you fallen for fake news at some point? How do you discern the difference between fake and real news, especially that news that is very carefully crafted to look real? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.com. nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Randall, here's an email that came in from Cole, who says, rather than take the time to become informed and make decisions based on logic and information, Cole says, our society has deemed it appropriate to, quote, go with your gut. Fake news is the inevitable result. Cole says things will not improve unless slash until we start demanding real knowledge take precedence over emotion. He says it starts with education. Cole, thank you so much. And Randall, a couple good points there. What do you think?
Well, again, I'll agree that it starts with education. That one of the things that got me into this project, this whole thing, was reading about a Stanford University study highlighting that high school students and college students had a hard time separating, you know, fake news from real news, and that things on websites, like high production values on a website, give an item greater credibility than, or give a fake item credibility, whereas a legitimate item on a lower production value site had weaker credibility. So that, you know, that sort of difficulty prompted me to offer to speak at a local school about fake news. And as it happened, the offer was instead taken up by a library and then a group of libraries. And that's how my little effort got momentum.
Well, and you have been doing a lot of this lately. And again, you're at the Concord Library tonight at 6. You were in Peterborough recently, and you've got other events scheduled. What's the most common question or concern that you encounter, Randall, as you go around the state talking to people?
Well, really, it's kind of, what can I do about it? You know, how can I deal with this? You know, I don't want to have to deal with every single thing, you know, I see and ask, is it true or not? And there is concern about its impact on society and government.
You're sort of preaching to the choir in that anybody who comes to one of these events is clearly concerned and doesn't want to be sucked in. But it kind of gets back to my earlier question, you know, would fake news survive if a lot of people weren't so happy to believe it?
No, it wouldn't. And not only...
Again, confirmation bias, you know?
Confirmation bias. And there's also a commercial imperative for it, you know? I mean, that's one of the things. The structure of the economy affects the information that flows through it always. And the pure, the hoax fake news sites, you know, that are apolitical but just want eyeballs, you know, they're getting advertisements and they get paid for. And these teenagers in Macedonia can earn hundreds of dollars a month by producing fake news, you know, and getting reimbursed through, you know, the long-distance accounts of advertisers who don't even know where it's appearing.
So you got to walk us through that, because I read through, you know, your information and a bunch of other information yesterday, and I was surprised how this whole thing works. You know, it isn't just people who want to tear down, you know, a particular political figure. It's often young men in Eastern Europe who were just, you know, making stuff up and putting it out there and getting advertisers and making some good money.
Yeah, that's right.
So just walk us through how that works.
Well, so, you know, there are these little organizations, little groups or networks, and the creator, you know, the prototypical Eastern European teenager will set up a website, create a fake news story, and you know, they learn what works. Then they'll start circulating it through Facebook, through Twitter, and maybe it'll get picked up by, you know, automated retweeters and stuff. But that drives attention to the website. When you share a fake news story and somebody opens it, you know, that starts the reward mechanism.
So they get a couple pennies per click?
Pennies, tenths of a penny, whatever, you know, hundredths of a penny. And the advertisers don't say, I want to advertise on this fake news site. They, you know, they go to the, you know, the Googles and whatever, you know, the big media buyers and say, I want, you know, whatever, 50 million impressions, or I want this search term, you know, I want to advertise it with this search term. And so the fake news website developers know how to capitalize on that, and, you know, get paid for the eyeballs. The big companies, the Googles and Facebooks, are taking steps to fight that. But it's, you know, it's like whack-a-mole. They crop up everywhere. They know how to defeat the fake news detectors, or they you know, it's a cat and mouse kind of game. So,
yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because Facebook has, you know, in a high profile way said, hey, we're aware of this. Hey, we're aware it's a problem. Hey, we're, you know, we're engaging our users to help us crack down this content. Are you saying, Randall, like, don't bother because they're just going to pop up somewhere else?
No, but we have to keep our, you know, everybody has to keep their guard up. You can't.
It's an arms race.
Right. It's an arms race. I just saw last night Facebook apparently is trying out with some users and so forth a little warning devices. You go to share something and it'll say, you know, this story is determined by our fact checkers to be fake. You know, are you sure you want to share this? And then, you know, there's a couple other layers. So, you know, they're trying again, to win the arms race.
Well, and again, with maybe, you know, science or health, you wouldn't want to propagate, you know, something. But with politics, even if your fact checker says it's false, you know, if it makes me feel good, I'm going to share it anyway.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, there is some truth to that. You know, and politics traditionally has been afforded the highest level of free speech protection in the United States. So, you know, there are the, you know, the thousand schools of thoughts contending, but some of them are just pure falsehood, and we have to be aware of that.
Let's go back to our listeners, Randall. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Jonathan's calling from Manchester. Hi, Jonathan, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
Yeah, I think the mainstream media has helped exacerbate the problem of reliability because of extreme bias, and including, unfortunately, NPR and HPR. During the election, the New York Times itself maintained that Hillary Clinton had a 96% chance of winning up till 30 minutes before they called it for Donald Trump. And HPR. On Bernie Sanders up through the primaries until he won, the standard from all your speakers, yourself, Dean, all those guys that you normally have on there, were very cynical about Bernie and his chance of winning here. And then after he won here, you continued the narrative that he couldn't win the rest of the country. On science, I called in on a show on bees and mentioned neonicotinoids and what companies are producing them in poison. You guys refused to take that call on the air.
Well, Jonathan,
within two days, it was in the New York Times, it was in the Science, you guys refused to acknowledge it till after the fact.
Well,
so
Jonathan, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry we messed up on the bee story. It sounds like you had a really great point there, and I'm sorry you didn't get on the air. But in terms of the political stuff, you know, he's saying, and I wonder what you think, Randall, mainstream media has helped exacerbate fake news with the mainstream media's own bias. You know, people don't trust mainstream media, so they turn elsewhere. Thank you so much for the point, Jonathan.
You know, I think there is some element to that, but I'd say, you know, we've got to understand the difference between fake news and bias and erroneous reporting.
So let's talk about
so
that.
So there's all that. You know, first of all, there's fake news. There's the hoaxes. There's the out-and-out lies. So that's one category. Then you start with a grain of truth or a grain of fact and build on it. So, you know, there are stories that get hyped from a grain of truth to fit a political viewpoint. Then there is, you know, bias, whether conscious or unconscious, the perceptions of the publisher, the journalist, you know, affecting the context. And then there's rhetoric, just saying, here I am, you know, I'm going to convince you that you know, at some point, that the sky, you know, the sky is red, and here's how I'm going to do it. So that's kind of upfront rhetorical, you know, argumentation. With regard to the election coverage, there was flawed statistical analysis of the polls of the election outcomes. You know, I watched those probabilities too on election night. But I do know that the authors of those pieces said this is a probability. This is not, you know, a prediction. I remember the New York Times, Nate Cohn, one of their analysts, said, you know, he always equated it to football, used a football metaphor. You know, right now, Hillary has, you know, the same chance of losing as a, you know, as a field goal kicker does of missing a 35-yard field goal. Well, that happens. And, you know, it happens in football. It happens in politics.
What do you think about Jonathan's point that because the mainstream media has, and he cited several examples, you know, gets it wrong, has a narrative, the narrative turns out to be wrong, that has helped the growth of so-called fake news?
I wouldn't say that's helped the growth of fake news.
The outright hoaxes.
Yeah, the outright hoaxes. I think, I mean, yes, to the extent that there's declining credibility of institutions in general, you know, I think that is true.
Which is what you said earlier about young people. They don't trust any of it.
Right. I mean, name an institution in modern life that's whose credibility is held up. Not very many. You know, concerns about or perceptions of mainstream media bias did lead to outlets such as Fox News, you know, and other, you know, talk radio, all kinds of ways in which a broader range of political perspectives could be shared and discussed.
Let's take another call. Thank you so much for that one, Jonathan. Ray joins us from Londonderry. Hi, Ray. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Wonder if perhaps we're thinking too much, talking too much about the purveyors of news, legitimate and illegitimate. And something that's fascinated me, I had a career in the service and midway through went into intelligence for several years. And what surprised me was well-educated, hard-headed, hard-thinking men, that they still had a great tendency to believe what they wanted to believe, regardless of certain facts that may have been put before them, and they weren't alternative facts. And I wonder about that human tendency. And the director of Royal Navy Intelligence World War II, Admiral Sir John Godfrey, he had pasted around the intelligence center, "Wishful thinking is the original sin of men of power." And I just wonder if some comments about the human tendency to believe what one wants to believe, which accords with one's world view and particular circumstances. And I'll take the answer off the air.
Sure, Ray, and thank you so much. We talked about this a little bit before, but go ahead. You know, people love their wishful thinking.
Yeah, and psychologists back that up. You know, all kinds of studies show that, you know, you can present somebody with a fact and, you know, they won't believe it. Groucho Marx? You know, who are you going to believe, me or your own lying eyes? You know, it's a challenge, and that becomes a personal challenge. How do we all overcome our preconceived notions and change our minds?
Well, Ray, thank you very much for the call. So, Randall, here's a Facebook comment from Stephanie who says, can't remember where I heard about this site, but it's become invaluable to me in wading through the great variety of news sites that appear in my Facebook newsfeed from friends and family on both sides of the political spectrum. Stephanie says, if I am not familiar with a news source, I look it up on this site. Then it helps me understand how to interpret what I am reading. I'm especially grateful for their, quote, least biased list. I think it's a great resource to have on hand, and the website she mentions is all one word, mediabiasfactcheck.com. Have you heard about this, Randall?
I haven't heard about that one. One I am familiar with now is called allsides.com, and that presents stories of the day as reported by a range of news outlets across the political spectrum. And they have their, you know, their own identification, but they'll say, you know, in regards like to the FBI director's testimony in Congress, they'll say, you know, here's how the mainstream, you know, whatever, and they put the New York Times in the mainstream. Here's how the New York Times reported it. Here's how, you know, a conservative publication reported it. Here's how a left-wing publication reported it. So you can kind of look at the context, the spin, the interpretation, you know, within one site. I will say there are several fact-checking organizations.
I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah, PolitiFact and Snopes.
And, you know, Facebook has started to work with some of those. The Poynter Institute in in Florida is now they have like a code of conduct or standards for fact-checking organizations to abide by.
Because politicians say that the fact checkers themselves are biased. I've heard that.
Well, they will say that, or they do. And in fact, Snopes has come under some particular attack from that could be traced back to sources that Snopes found wanting in terms of credibility. I hate to single them out because they have, I think they've withstood those attacks. But if you disagree, check other organizations. But the pointer standards do give some kind of guide to checking out what the fact-checking organizations.
And again, you're a sophisticated person when it comes to discerning all this. And Stephanie, too, who sent us this Facebook comment, she's going to this mediabiasfactcheck.com and checking it out. A lot of people are just tired, busy. I'm just listening to you talk and I'm thinking, wow, that's a lot of work. I don't know if I want to put that much work into it.
Well, and that's right. And that's where you start saying, okay, these are my go-to news sources. These are the ones, I trust for facts. These are the ones I trust for opinion, and you can limit your diet to that. And you can limit your exposure through the day, we used to read the newspaper or what on our train commute or whatever, and that was, we got informed for the day. So you don't have to be in a 24/7 news cycle unless you want to be.
What about the fact checkers? I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about that. Do you think that they are of rising usefulness, or given what people have talked about already, including our caller Ray in Londonderry, confirmation bias? Do people not care if something's rated, pants on fire 16 times? Does it really matter?
I think it does matter. I think and in terms of modern practices, modern culture, I think we can use that, especially when we go to propagate what we see. If we're sharing things that we know to be false, that's pretty irresponsible, or that we know to be wrong. So as a tool, I think we need to all be more careful about what we share on the internet. I've gotten burned. Everybody has.
You have, really?
Sure.
Even a guy like you who's been with,
Absolutely. Sharing things without, sharing headlines without reading the stories. The classic one, non-political, some celebrity death. And you share it, and then all of a sudden somebody says, that happened 5 years ago. Okay, so why is it in my newsfeed today?
Oh, wow.
We all fall for that.
All right, well, if Randall Mickelson falls for it, don't feel bad if you fall for it as well. More in just a moment. Stay with us.
Hello, thanks for subscribing and for listening to The Exchange podcast. I'm Andrew Perella. I'm the production manager at New Hampshire Public Radio, where The Exchange is produced. And I'm here with Christina Phillips, who's one of the producers on The Exchange. How's it going, Christina?
I'm great. Thanks for having me here.
Excellent. So I suppose you have heard about this crazy new initiative, Tripod.
Yeah. So all this month, we're asking you to tell a friend about a podcast you love. So maybe it's somebody who's never listened to podcasts before. Maybe they're a radio listener, or maybe they don't listen to the radio at all and they don't know anything about NPR, but they've got a phone and you might want to introduce them to some podcasts.
Exactly. What we're basically asking you to do is become a missionary for the pod sphere. We want you to go out and find someone you know who doesn't podcast and encourage them to podcast by recommending a podcast you think they'd love. So, Christina, what are you listening to these days?
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
I have so many on my phone that I don't have any music because I don't have room for music. One that I've been listening to a lot recently is Reveal, which nice. Comes from the Center for Investigative Reporting, NPRX. And basically what they do is they take a story, a lead, and they investigate it over a long period of time. They've got a team of journalists, and they go in and they report on something maybe that's related to current events or maybe not. So recently they investigated in California a medical marijuana grower who is a small farmer, and he's struggling now that big industry is coming into California, now that they've got legalized marijuana, legalized medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana. So they investigated that, and that was super interesting, and I knew nothing about it. So, yeah, it's a great, great podcast.
Sounds like it's right up the alley of Exchange listeners. So anyone who's a fan of The Exchange would enjoy something like Reveal, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think it's really great storytelling as well. And you hear from some experts that we've probably had on the show in the past. Who knows? Because we have so many great guests. So, yeah.
So you heard it here, folks. If you're digging podcasts, recommend The Exchange, recommend Reveal to a friend or loved one. And you can tell us what you're listening to by, what is it?
And so you want to use the hashtag TryPod. That's TryPod. You see what we did there? Yeah, so let us know what you've recommended, and we'll be recommending too.
All right, keep listening.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, breaking down the truth from the so-called alternative facts when it comes to fake news. Our guest is longtime Reuters reporter Randall Mickelson, a former White House correspondent and national editor. Let's hear from you. Have you been taken in by fake news? How do you discern fact from fiction? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email from Susie in Canaan who says, lately I have been increasingly frustrated with the flip side of fake news. I've encountered people who label any news they don't like as fake news, even if it is demonstrably true. No amount of documented facts will convince these people otherwise, as they insist that any data they don't like is fraudulent. And Susie, I was in D.C. a couple weeks ago, and I heard some women on the metro kind of saying, yeah, that's fake news, you know, just because it disrupted them. Thank you so much, Susie. What do you think, Randall?
Oh, I think that's going to happen. I mean,
everybody's using this term now.
Everybody uses it. I mean, fake news is, you know, one of those clearly identifiable pejorative terms. It's easy, you know, it's easy to dismiss something as fake news using that label. And, it's going to get misapplied. If you feel strongly, you can challenge and say, no, it's not fake, and here's why. But, you know, but it's an indication of on the part of the speaker that they just don't want to deal with it. They don't want to hear it. They don't, you know, they're not going to consider it.
So has the heightened use of the term fake news, Randall, actually helped the fake news creators in that now anybody can say, you know, dismiss anything with that term? You can slap that label on it and dismiss it.
I don't know that it's helped the creators, but it's given the public figures and so forth a new weapon to wield. But one thing I think it has, an interesting thing the fake news phenomenon has engendered, is a commercial capitalization. And I'm thinking in particular of a campaign by 20th Century Fox to promote a movie. And they created a bunch of fake news websites.
Oh, right. I heard about that. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more.
Okay. So they created a bunch of fake news websites. And, you know, as you may know, Fox is part of the Rupert Murdoch empire, but I think that's coincidental. But they created a fake news website saying, for example, bombshell, Trump and Putin met in Swiss resort before the election.
Not true.
Not true. It was a headline was Sacramento Dispatch, which doesn't exist. And there were several other stories that along that lines, and they circulated widely. Well, the whole purpose was to promote a movie at which, you know, the notion of slippery truth was part of the theme. These sites have since been taken down when it became known that they were part of a movie promotion. And, clearly it backfired in the court of public opinion. But what it showed was that our organization thought the phenomenon was widespread enough that, you know, it could resonate.
Again, our number here in The Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. And Peggy's in Center Harbor. Hi, Peggy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that I feel it's very disturbing that, in my opinion, one of the biggest perpetrators of fake news is the President of the United States. And this is really disturbing, about the wiretapping by Obama, which was totally untrue. the fact that 3 million people voted illegally, completely untrue. I mean, he does this constantly. And I get my news from NPR. It's unbiased. It's fair. And I wish more people would.
Well, thank you for the shout out, Peggy. And this is a tricky question. President Trump has said some things that so far appear not to be true. FBI is still, I think, looking into this wiretapping incident. But boy, how does that fit into this whole issue of fake news? It's one thing to talk about teenagers in Macedonia. It's another thing to talk about the president.
Well, that is, I mean, it is interesting. That's it's separate from the phenomenon of hoaxes, I would say, you know, the classical fake news hoaxes. I think it's political rhetoric. I think, you know, it's subject to fact checking, and it should be. And news organizations have a responsibility and a duty to call it to call it out if it's you know, an untruth.
Yeah. Peggy, thank you for the call. And let's go to Liz in Dover. Hi, Liz. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, thank you so much. So I'm going to defend somebody who I don't support. I never supported Donald Trump. I didn't support Hillary Clinton either, full disclosure. But there was one story that really got my goat about Donald Trump, which is him mocking a disabled reporter. So I'm going to the fact that, you know, a lot of my Democrat friends just believe that he absolutely mocked a disabled reporter, and now he hates all disabled people because of that. And that is just fact in their mind. And that was spun by the mainstream media, because what they did is they took his big flamboyant video and they cut it down to one picture of him holding his hand up, kind of gimpy, in a certain position. And they also juxtaposed that to a photo of that reporter in the same position. And he said, look what he did, look what he did. And they spun it and spun it and spun it and spun it.
It was picked up by political ads, Liz, too.
And it was really debunked pretty well, because that's how he mocks a lot of people.
But in this instance, he didn't, Liz, you're saying.
I don't believe he mocked that disabled reporter because he was disabled. I believe it was spun that way hard by the mainstream media to hurt Trump. Now, he hurts himself quite enough, but I'm just saying that is a really good example of really close to like fake news being spun by the media very strongly, because of the way they juxtaposed that. They pushed it real hard. And if you look at all the video of how he mocked other people, including Chris Christie and others, that's how he does it. So I don't know.
Well, Liz, thank you for the call. And Randall, what do you know about this? What do you think about this?
Well, I've seen video of the incident, you know, not just a still photo. I think the media in general did, you know, they worked pretty hard to interpret it and make, you know, draw conclusions or present this issue. I'm not in a position to judge Trump's intent. And I'm aware there is a political debate, and it was fueled by, you know, partisans on both sides. It was used in campaign ads against Trump, and that's going to provoke a response by Trump defenders. And you know, and hence you have this debate in which, you know, frame by frame analysis of his hand movements become, you know, something of an obsession or a focus of attention for partisans.
Well, political ads have gotten pretty sophisticated with the tools available, the cut and paste tools that used to look so fake. Now they look pretty real.
Yeah, they do. It's, you know, it's really hard. And not only do they look real, but they can be produced and run by any number of groups. You know, again, the limitations, the field in which political ads can play has been opened up quite a bit, and people can run all kinds of stuff. They can run it on the web and not on television, and it gets around creating all kinds of impressions.
So as somebody who has long been involved in mainstream media, right? We could call Thomson Reuters that.
Absolutely.
You cover the White House, national editor, and so forth. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future? When it comes to this topic,
the topic of media credibility,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and the willingness of people to consume fake news.
To consume fake news, I think people are more concerned about it now. You know, it's been exposed as a phenomenon. You know, again, the fake news hoaxes, they may be, it may be able to control those. You know, that may fade over time, but I think more deeper questions about bias and about hyping and that kind of thing, I think they will proliferate. You know, the organizations are there that can capitalize on it. The thing that gives me some hope is that people are realizing they're starting to pay again, you know, for news. The you know, traditional news outlets are reporting increases in paid subscriptions. You know, that's significant. That's somebody saying, I value, you know, my news source and I want it to continue to thrive.
And Randall, let's go back to our listeners. Judy's in Keene. Hi, Judy. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Peggy made two of the points I was going to make, but I have an anecdote.
Sure.
Which is that you can also lie by omission. And it's not anything new. 100 years ago, I was in Israel just after the incursion into Lebanon. And the headline on the BBC worldwide, hour after hour, all day, said, Israeli troops are pouring over the border into Lebanon. That was all they said. Well, I was on the road that day, and there were an equal number coming back because the troops were being located. I saw them myself.
So even the BBC misrepresented what was going on, Judy. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there was a lot of misrepresentation internationally at that time about that because bias against Israel. But that was particularly anybody who looked out their window could have seen this.
You know, we do hear this from people. Go ahead, Randall.
Well,
again, this gets back to an earlier caller who said, look, mainstream media doesn't get it right. So blame yourself for the rise of fake news.
Well, a couple of things. You know, certain areas of international relations and politics, you know, are subject to vastly different perspectives. I will say that. I'm not familiar with the BBC report in question, but, you know, many news organizations focus on official actions and official events. And if they see, you know, troops being sent over a border, you know, that's an action by one government in relation to another versus, you know, refugee flows or whatever. Again, I'm not familiar with that additional story, but that, you know, there is kind of an official bias in news organizations where they have reported on the comings and doings of official organizations, governments, and so forth.
Here's an email from Anne, and I'm going to throw at you quick, Randall, because we're nearing the end of the hour. But I do like this question. Anne says, can the victims of fake news sue the source for libel? Maybe if more victims sued, fake news will diminish.
Probably you can technically, I mean, probably fake news sites do commit libel. But try finding, you know, that Macedonian teenager and, you know, extracting some money from him. You know, good luck. It's technically you're right, but practically, it's very difficult.
Well, Randall, I wish we had more time. It's been really good to talk to you. And I want to let our listeners know that, again, Randall Mickelson is giving presentations around the state. He'll be in Concord tonight, right, at the library at 6 o'clock. We'll put more information on our website, as well as a link to Randall's blog, which has his slideshow on this. And there's some pretty eye-opening pictures on it. So check it out at our website. We'll put a link there, nhpr.org. Randall Mickelson, it was really nice to meet you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Laura. It was a pleasure.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. and thanks.